Hi, my name is Kunal, and welcome to the Geeks of the Valley podcast, which connects with some of the brightest minds globally who are leading their respective industries today to discuss the hottest upcoming industry trends and how their work is affecting the global economy. This morning, from the San Francisco Bay Area, we have a very special guest joining us, who is in ex-investment banking at JP Morgan, a former long-short analyst at BAM, and a recent graduate of the Stanford Law and Business School. Please welcome the current co-founder of Thomas Street Partners, Sam Krieg. Sam, thank you so much for joining us today.
No, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And how are things with you in light of COVID?
Things are good, you know. We're work from home still, of course, and the Bay Area is pretty locked down, but all things considered, I think I have things pretty good. It's relatively easy to do our work remotely, so things are pretty good on my end.
I'm happy to hear that. Let's jump into the first question here, shall we?
Great.
So tell me about yourself and your background, and how it led you to the path of founding a search fund.
Of course. Well, I'm from just outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, originally, and I grew up kind of in southeastern Wisconsin, seeing family-owned businesses and, a lot of entrepreneurialism around me, not in the, Silicon Valley, Bay Area, VC-backed startup type of world, but a lot of small businesses, family-owned businesses. And I thought that was really cool growing up. I kind of thought that I might want to be like a plant manager, when I grew up, that sort of thing. And then I ended up going to Williams College, a small liberal arts school in rural Western Massachusetts. And coming out of that, didn't really know what I wanted to do. Got the advice that if you want to go into business, especially coming from like a liberal arts background, having, understanding accounting and finance and kind of the numbers, the language of business would be very helpful. And the best kind of training program for that at the time, in my understanding, was either going to a big consulting firm or a big investment banking group. And so I left Williams. I went, and as you mentioned, I went to JP Morgan. I was in, their standard analyst program, the financial institutions group, had a great experience there, learned a ton. It definitely served its purpose, but quickly figured out I was more interested in doing something that was like business, more business focused than finance focused. And kind of a next natural step in that was to go do investing. I was pretty drawn to public market, like hedge fund investing versus traditional private equity, because there is often kind of less hierarchy and it's an eat what you kill model, that sort of thing, which I found very exciting when I was coming out of investment banking. And so I went to BAM, Valley Asset Management. I was on a small team there managing like over $1 billion in equity value of long short portfolio. So we were kind of market neutral. And as a very young investor, I was making 20, $50 million investments with, of course, with my portfolio manager and other analysts on the team, weighing in. And I like that a lot, but that environment is a little bit cutthroat and there was some turnover on my team. So I sat next to a number of different people while I was at Ballyasny, and that's because it's a hard environment. There's a lot of churn, and it's a little bit transactional. And I have only good things to say about Ballyasny, the fund, but just in general, that's kind of the hedge fund world for you. And so I figured out that I thought that I wanted to make a switch and do something that was a little bit more kind of relationship style business. I was thinking about entrepreneurship, my background growing up. And so I decided that I wanted to go back to school. Applied to the JD MBA program, the law and business schools at Stanford, got in, and really went in thinking that I was going to want to make a switch probably into private market investing, which, you know, we could talk about later if it's of interest, but making a switch away from public market investing. And I had this idea of kind of entrepreneurship in the back of my mind. I had the opportunity, I was asked to lead the relaunch of a small nonprofit. And so I had the opportunity to kind of get my hands dirty in an operational way on the side for a few months before I went to Stanford. And then also for like 20, 25 hours a week for a couple years while at Stanford. And that really changed my life, I would say, and changed my thinking career-wise. I went from thinking that investing was kind of first and foremost what I wanted to do, to I liked investing, but ultimately I wanted to go do operations. And so that kind of mix of wanting to do operations, liking entrepreneurship, and, you know, being interested by investing in private markets. I didn't know what a search fund was, but those kind of come together in a search fund. And so I was introduced to the search fund model while I was at Stanford. My co-founder, Hill Hamrick, he, you know, was very taken by the model through discovering it at Harvard and through some family connections and transitioning out of the military on his end. And so he and I, and actually a third partner of ours, kind of got together, and we were talking about entrepreneurship and career paths in general, and kind of explored different models of entrepreneurship, and ultimately figured out that this search fund model, you know, had the you know, had this investing piece that we found interesting and that I liked kind of early on in my career, but also had this really cool combination of entrepreneurship and operations that we were looking to expose ourselves to. And so it became quickly apparent that this was the path that we wanted to take. And so we decided to found Thomas Street Partners and raise the fund at kind of the beginning of this year, and have been out searching and operating the fund more or less since then.
Sam, what a fascinating background. It's kind of interesting to see how you kind of experimented around right outside of college, and went on to do all these fascinating things. And now you're the current co-founder of TSP, Thomas Street Partners, right? Before we dive deeper into this, for the listeners out there, what is a search fund, and what is the fund's philosophy mainly around?
Yeah, great question. So a search fund is an investment vehicle. I believe it's been around since like the early 1980s. There have been a couple hundred of them at this point, and there's a study that comes out every other year from Stanford with some good data on this particular investment structure. And what the fund is, it's a little bit like a single shot private equity fund. So a searcher, that would be myself and my partner Hill, we raise a small pool of capital, so call it somewhere between like $400,000 and $1 million, and that pool of capital funds the searcher, Hill and myself, for a year, 2 years, 2.5 years, maybe 3 years, while we go out and source a business that we want to buy. And then we go back to the same, say, dozen or 15 or 20 investors who gave us the initial pool of capital. They gave us that money to go find an acquisition target, basically. And when we find that acquisition target, we go back to them and say, hey, we found XYZ business that we want to buy. It's going to be, you know, $20 million, say, and we need $10 million of equity to purchase this business. And we go out and we do a second round of fundraising to actually purchase the company. company. And so it's a little bit like a private equity fund. You're out there sourcing, and it's a style of private equity. You're out there looking for private businesses to acquire, and then you find them, call some capital or raise capital to actually acquire the business. The differences between, you know, traditional private equity and search funds are probably two or threefold. One is that the money that we raise will be specific to the deal versus being specific to the fund. Two is that we won't take a portfolio approach. So we'll look for a single business to buy. And then most importantly is when we purchase the company, my partner and I will likely both go in and take on operational leadership roles. So we will likely take over as co-CEOs of the business. And I'd say our philosophy, you know, we kind of split that into our investment philosophy and our kind of leadership philosophy. On the leadership side, you know, we're looking for a business that's successful and has a strong culture already, and we can continue that culture and lead in kind of a people first way. You know, I mentioned growing up really liking these small businesses and the entrepreneurship that I saw around me in Wisconsin. And I think both Hill, my partner, and I, you know, have done a lot of talking about our values, and kind of first among those is, you know, people first, and business is a very personal endeavor. Relationships are very important. And we believe by doing right by kind of our team and our employees, they will do right by us and our customers as well. And so kind of keeping in mind that there are real people involved here, I think is kind of central to our approach. On the investment side, you know, we're really looking for businesses, predominantly business to business businesses. So not business to consumer, mostly services. So less manufacturing, because there's kind of technical knowledge that's really important on the manufacturing side, and because of kind of the asset heavy nature of a lot of those businesses, but kind of B2B businesses that offer services with recurring revenue streams, hopefully in, you know, a growing market, where things aren't changing so fast that we need to step in and lead right away in a way where we're going to have to be making, you know, kind of bet the business decisions. We want an industry that's growing and relatively stable such that we can get in there, kind of not break anything for the first year, really get our feet under us, and then hopefully, you know, bring in some resources and help take a business that's doing great already and just kind of push it a little bit to the next level, or, you know, pull it to the next level. And that's kind of the model and the investment philosophy. Happy to follow up on any of that though.
And the search fund model, right? There's everything from like stage one, from raising the initial capital, all the way to stage four, right? Stage two being searching for the acquisition, and then stage three going into operation and value creation, right? And then stage four being the exit. What stage are you guys currently in? And how long do you guys feel like you plan to stay in that stage four?
We're currently in, well, I'm actually forgetting. What's stage one?
Raising the initial capital.
We have raised our capital. We raised our capital at the beginning of 2020, and we are currently searching for a business. So we are in that search source phase, and we're actively evaluating acquisition targets. Our hope is that we find the business that we're going to buy tomorrow. And if we, you know, reconnect 3 months from now, Hill and I will be on to the next stage and we'll be running that business. But the data just industry-wide is that it tends to take almost 2 years to find a good acquisition target and to close on it. So my expectation would be, you know, the next 12, 18, 24 months, we're still in that searching, sourcing stage, but definitely hoping that it's faster than that.
How do you feel COVID is kind of affecting this currently?
Yeah, so you hear a few, there's a few kind of different murmurs in the market. Initially, kind of debt markets shut down at the size of business that we're looking at. So that kind of slowed the acquisition market. Also, kind of in March, April, even in May, a lot of the owners, you know, they went from maybe being willing to talk about selling business to 100%, 120% of their, you know, attention was on what's going on with COVID. How do I transition my workforce to remote workforce? You know, what am I doing? How is my cash flow and really running the business? So COVID for a while there kind of shut down the market, the acquisition market, both in terms of kind of the credit side of getting a deal funded, but also in terms of owners weren't really ready to discuss. They were distracted, understandably so, with actually making sure their businesses were surviving and thriving. My impression is that one, credit is kind of come back even at these kind of low, you know, small size deals that we're looking at. And two, owners are kind of open to discussions more. But it's definitely, you know, slowed down the market, in a lot of places, and it's made, you know, it's tough as a searcher to evaluate businesses. It's tough to say, you know, if you took a hit, if a business took a hit with COVID, is that really specific to this COVID situation, or is it actually that this business is kind of cyclical? And those can have very different implications for how attractive a business is. So the market has kind of slowed down. It's made looking at businesses and evaluating businesses a little bit more difficult. And then I would say it also, the actual like act of searching, a lot of that would be meeting with business owners in person, having a team, you know, in the office working together in person. And that just kind of the cadence and what that looks like as you're searching has changed because it's much more Zoom call or phone call and much less, you know, in person, which I think you're probably seeing not just with searching, but kind of investing across the spectrum. And, you know, any business these days, it's probably moving that way anyways.
Yeah. And recently speaking of, you know, in stage two, the raising the acquisition capital, right? In general, what are some of, you know, I guess the major acquisitions you are seeing in the search industry today and in what verticals?
Yeah. So I am probably, you know, as a searcher, I definitely don't see the full market by any means. So please take this kind of with a grain of salt, but the big categories, I'd say maybe there are four of them. One is just B2B services, and that can be all types of stuff that you, you know, would never even think of. So it's hard for me to give specific examples, but there, you know, you might buy like a specialized accounting firm, for instance, or, you know, like vegetation management companies that are doing services for businesses, are doing facilities management for other businesses. There's a business that was Search Fund acquired that, that goes and like in high rises, like manages all of the plants in the high rise. That's a business that was acquired. So B2B services is a big one. There's a lot of vertically based software. So, you know, all types of stuff around billing or, you know, revenue cycle management, you know, software that makes business processes more efficient. That's another area that there are a number of acquisitions and searchers are targeting. Then just more generally tech-enabled services. So, you know, that would be a mixture of the two above, but B2B services that benefit from technology. And then there's all types of stuff in the healthcare space that are being acquired in, you know, addiction rehab clinics or autism spectrum disorder therapy, And some of those are service providers, and some of them are, you know, actual providers to patients, and some of them are services themselves that providers are buying. But it's a number of different things: services, software, tech-enabled services, healthcare, among other things. And I'd say the unifying theme is that it tends to be B2B and, you know, recurring revenue, and hopefully in growing markets.
And Sam, when looking at stage three, such as operation and value creation, right, they have that 4 to 7 year average before you exit. The average exit for its search fund models yield an average of, you know, around 33.7% IRR. Is this a better alternative asset class to invest in for investors compared to others? And if so, why are more people not backing capital into search fund models?
Yeah, well, I of course think it's a great model, and have, you know, devoted my I've put a lot of my eggs in kind of the search fund basket, if you will. I think that is it a better alternative asset class? I'm not sure. I probably don't have an answer there. I think there's you know, it's an illiquid investment. You know, arguably more illiquid than private equity more generally, debt, you know, maybe more liquid than hedge funds, certainly more liquid than like a mutual fund or an ETF or something like that. And so there are definitely downsides. There is, you know, it does have a high average IRR, but there are risks associated with that. I think that as far as the second question, though, why are more people not backing capital in search funds? I think that there has been a huge inflow of capital, to my understanding, into the search fund space. And so if you look at the Stanford search fund model, you know, 20 years ago, there were 1, 2, 3, you know, searches that were funded a year. And in 2019, I think there were 50 or more. And so there has been a tremendous growth in terms of how many funds are being backed. I think that there are natural bottlenecks here. And one of those bottlenecks is the number of quality searchers. So, you know, something like a third of searches end up not acquiring a business. And I think that's a tremendous amount of risk to take on as you know, a recent MBA grad, that you might go spend 2 years trying to find a business and walk away with, you know, some people might say with nothing to show for it. That's not the way that I view it or my partner views it. And we're fairly confident that we will find something, but there's, you know, a fair amount of luck involved. And I think the risk of, you know, not ending up in that operational role and that leadership position is lower in search funds than it is, you know, in startups, for instance, I would say. But there is a tremendous amount of risk to the searcher, and of course, not to downplay the investors and the risk they're taking. But I think there has been a lot of capital that's flowed into the space, and I think my understanding is the bottleneck to a certain degree is, you know, qualified, high quality searchers, people like Hill and myself who want to go do this. But again, I would say that that's grown a ton as well. So it's definitely a space that's growing.
Sam, thank you for that insight. Now that we've spent most of the call talking about search fund models and search funds, I really want to take a step back to talk about life advice and career choices for these last couple of questions of the call. How did you think through your career choices in life?
Yeah, good question. And I think I probably didn't think as much at the time as I will make it seem, you know, here. So take everything I say with a little bit of a grain of salt. But I think early on in my career, I thought about gaining like training and learning as much as I could, having a brand, you know, having people kind of know something about me because of a stamp on my resume, something that having a known entity kind of, and then doing things that were going to open doors and allow me to do other things. And that was kind of what I thought about up until business school. And then at some point, I think I needed to change focus and pivot a little bit and focus more on narrowing down what I want to do, what my role was going to be, and kind of play to my strengths versus trying to kind of develop skills across the board. And so that was kind of how I thought about things in the beginning, kind of training brand and opening doors, and then more recently on narrowing down my focus and hopefully playing to my strengths. And I think how that played out is when I left Williams, I think is a great school, but it's not a brand that's known to most people the same way, a Harvard or Princeton or Yale or something or Stanford would be known. And so I wanted to have, again, that training, that brand, and something that would open doors. And JP Morgan, their investment banking program, it's a very clean, clear program. They bring a couple hundred people in a year, I think, and they have it down. They train you. You leave and you know how to do, accounting, finance, how to model, you have these real skills. And you have a stamp on your resume that has that kind of that brand, and that opens doors to a lot of other things in finance. I think that's a little bit finance and investing specific, but I do think there's value. Even if it's not a JP Morgan or a Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, something like that. If you're going into technology, I think there is some value to going to a Facebook or a Google. Somewhere that I imagine, brings in a lot of people and knows how to train them and is well known before going and doing kind of a startup role or something like that. And the same thing too with consulting, going to a McKinsey or a Bain or a BCG, Deloitte, something like that, where they have a program that's gonna put you through training. You're going to leave with real tangible skills. And a lot of businesses are looking to hire out of JP Morgan or hire out of McKinsey or hire out of Google. So that's how I thought about things early on again. And then once I kind of figured out that this search fund thing was what I wanted to do, Hill and I had a lot of conversations around what are his strengths, what are my strengths, what are the areas that we're working on or less good at, and kind of how can we build a team around us so that we can focus on things that we do really well and have other people take on things that we're weaker on. But I think that it takes some time to figure out what are the things that you're really good at and really passionate about. And so I think early on in your career, learning as much as you can and kind of keeping doors open, that's how I approached it. And I think, of course, there's also, that's a relatively conservative way, I think, to approach your career. And I look on fondly and impressed by people who are so passionate, that they drop out of school to start a business or, believe in a startup or believe in their own abilities so well and kind of are risk tolerant to the point where they can go to a small business, right out of school, anything like that. So I don't mean to downplay any of those approaches, but that wasn't the approach that I took. I wanted something that I was going to leave after a couple of years, kind of having a skill set that was marketable and a resume with a name on it that would lead to introductions and recruitment opportunities.
Yeah, that's a very interesting perspective. And I think this perfectly leads into our last question of the call. What piece of advice would you give to people out there from the journey you've kind of had thus far in life?
Yeah, another great question. I think that pretty simply, it's just like lean into whatever you're doing. The most meaningful professional experience that I had, the thing that I've learned the most from, was my experience running this small nonprofit, Reclaim Childhood. And I never would have expected, one, that would be the most meaningful experience professionally that I would have. Two, I never would have expected that I would have ended up being the acting executive director or acting director of operations for a number of years when I graduated from Williams. I never would have expected, like at each point along the way that I was involved in this nonprofit, I could not have predicted what was going to happen a year from then. And in fact, I have a number of times that like I can reflect on right now where a partner of mine and I kind of laid out what we thought was going to happen or what our plan was, and it ended up being dramatically different. And I learned so much from that experience through like showing up, digging in, devoting time and effort to it. And I think that that's in general what ends up happening in your career is you get out in terms of learning what you put into it. And so you should just lean into what you're doing. There's a ton to be learned. I think no matter what industry you're in or what position you're in, and if you just show up, you know, with a can-do attitude and kind of take on, you know, whatever you can, ask for more responsibility, again, lean into what you're doing, you're going to learn a ton and things will be more fun in that way. If you just kind of show up with, you know, this is my job, 9 to 5. I'm going to do what they ask me to, but I'm not going to be proactively looking to take more on. Then I think you will, again, you'll get out of it what you put into it. And so I think that's true in each one of the jobs that I've had. You know, the more I've leaned in, the more I've gotten out of it. My point, I think, is kind of you never know what exactly which exact opportunity is going to end up being, you know, the most fruitful on that front. And so I would just be biased towards, you know, staying the extra hour, asking, you know, a little bit more, trying to, you know, take on a little bit more experience or a little bit more responsibility to gain that experience. Because, you know, even if you're doing investment banking, it may be the case that the most meaningful experience that you have is running a podcast or, you know, being involved in a nonprofit or whatever it is. And you can really gain experience and meaningful skills by being able to do work that, that you ask for. It's amazing what types of responsibility people will give you and the kind of length of leash that they'll give you if you are willing to do the work and actively asking for, you know, more work. People will let you do things at a very junior point in your career if you are, you know, making their life easier. And so would just encourage you to lean in, soak up as much as you can, and, you know, be open to that valuable experience and valuable knowledge coming from unexpected places.
So it's really about being proactive and willing to learn as much as possible.
I'd say so. Yeah, exactly.
And Sam, for the listeners out there who are interested in reaching out to you to maybe catch a cup of coffee or investing in you, what would be the best point of contact?
Yeah, you should definitely find me on LinkedIn, Sam Krieg, co-founder of Thomas Creek Partners, and connect with me on LinkedIn, and then we can take it from there, I'd say.
Sam, it was a pleasure having you on Geeks of the Valley, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Kunal. It was a pleasure on my end as well.